Hi, Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Skyline studio here until 4. At 4 o'clock, we head over to Bradley Place on the TV side of WGN, get an hour's worth of news and entertainment from them, and then the great Bob Surratt starts at 5, has your morning drive. WGN is here 24-7. We are here for you. We are here to inform you, keep you company, and to entertain you. We're here 24-7 for that, and we'll get you through this. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We're going to talk TV here. All of us are stuck inside. I've been watching a lot. Well, I watch a lot of TV even before this happened. But we've all been watching a lot of TV. And if you want to jump in with some TV talk, 312-981-7200. We're going to talk about some of the luckiest people in history. The internet was born on this day. So we're going to talk about the early days of the internet and have some share some internet memories. We always play classic comedy from the Johnny Carson Show. You can watch the Johnny Carson Show on Antenna TV. Every night. We're going to go back to 1981 for an appearance by Jerry Seinfeld. So that's all coming up. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for getting in here. Dan Feinberg, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter, joins us once a month to talk TV. And hello, Dan.
How are you doing, Nick?
All right. How are you holding up?
One day at a time, I guess, or one TV drama at a time, yeah. However it goes.
Yeah. Well, you know, obviously, you know, people being stuck inside, I would imagine that the TV viewing has escalated a lot.
Definitely, that seems to be what the reports are. Definitely, all of the numbers for primetime shows, as they were coming to the end for their seasons, have all been, for the most part, up. Definitely, Netflix had a very, very positive, I guess, subscriber and proceeds call last week, or maybe the week before, where they went up wildly beyond what their expectations had been, basically reversing a couple slow quarters in a row. So yeah, we're all doing the same thing, as everyone's trying to stay sane as best they can.
Yeah.
Television helps.
It does. No, it does. I think it does. You know, it keeps us entertained and occupied, and sometimes if we want to just laugh. And as I've said before, Dan, during this time, the show that people should be watching if they're not watching it is Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist. It's the right show for this time, I think.
But it's coming to an end.
I know.
It's coming to an end. What are we going to do without our weekly dose of Zoe and tears and all of the whole thing?
I don't know what I'm going to do on Monday mornings. I won't be able to cry every Monday morning now.
I'm sure I could recommend something that would make you cry. But no, I definitely, that is a show that I have been enjoying watching all spring. It you know, as the kids say, it yields all of the feels, and not that many shows do that. And so, you know, there are only a few shows where I've reached the point where it's like, okay, now I'm going to be sad when the season ends. And unfortunately, a lot of the shows that I'm like that with, whether it's Better Call Saul, which ended last week, yeah, whether it's Better Things, which ends this week, yeah, a lot of the really good stuff is coming to an end.
Yeah, Better Things ends. I mean, I didn't realize that it was going to be, you know, the season finale tonight. And yeah, that makes me sad.
You know, we had a couple of months where a lot of the very best shows on TV had come back, and you know, there were four or five, you know, top 10 worthy shows on at all times, and that was great. And now there will be other stuff on.
Yeah. I do want to mention, you mentioned Better Things, which is, I think, one of the best shows on TV. It's on FX. Pamela Adlon is, you know, magnificent in it, but also behind the camera and everything. And the girls who play her daughters are just, they get better every episode. I do want to mention that if you're a fan of the show, they're doing a mini marathon on FX where Pamela Adlon picked her six favorite episodes from the first three seasons, and that's going to run before the season finale tonight.
Well, how many times did you watch the opening for last week's episode?
Oh yeah. Oh my God. Oh my God, Dan. Well, you know I'm a big Jerry Lewis fan, obviously. I was stunned by it. I thought it was, for those people who didn't watch, the middle daughter just in a white blank room, kind of like where John Oliver does his show now, comes out, sits down, and does the Jerry Lewis invisible typewriter bit from Who's Minding the Store. And it was just, there's no reason for it. You know what I mean? It had nothing to do with the rest of the episode, but it was great.
I don't even know that I understand what they were trying to suggest the plot purpose was, because it was like, were they saying that Frankie was filming a commercial where someone asked her to do that? Because there was a director on set, but the director was a man. But Pamela Adlon was also there, but I think she was there in character. But it didn't really matter, because it was just such a joyful 2 minutes of television.
It really was. It was fantastic, and I was beside myself, Dan, when it started, because, yeah, I mean, you know, regular listeners to this show know how much I love Jerry Lewis. Like, he's one of my heroes, and I love that bit. And as soon as it started, I was like, you gotta be kidding me! I was so overwhelmed. It was great.
And the thing that I mentioned on Twitter is, I feel like the degree of difficulty is probably higher for this version, because I don't assume Hannah Alligood has ever experienced a typewriter in her life.
Yeah.
And she had to pantomime using a typewriter, whereas Jerry Lewis, he used a typewriter, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But this, you know, this is a 15-year-old actress who probably has never interacted with a typewriter, and just such a wonderful 2 minutes of TV.
It really was. It really was great. Yeah, it was great. So for people who want to catch up on Better Things, Pamela Adlon has picked 6 of her favorite episodes from the first 3 seasons, and then the season finale will air after that on FX. It's a great show, and it'll make you.
And then after people have watched those 6 episodes, though, at this point, just go to FX on Hulu and watch the entire thing.
Yeah, because
you're home. It's what we're doing.
Yeah, all three. Yeah, exactly. All 3 seasons are available on FX on Hulu, and it is a great show. A great, great, great show. Dan, hold on, okay?
Sure.
All right, Dan Feinberg is with us. We'll get to some of the reviews of some of the TV that he's seen. And if you want to jump in here, because we're all stuck inside and we're all, you know, getting distracted by TV, which is a good thing. What have you been watching? And 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Yeah. Nick DiGilio on 720 WGN, live in the Skyline studio here till 4 o'clock. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Dan Feinberg, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter, joins us once a month. And as we are confined to our houses and apartments, we're watching a lot of TV. So Dan's got a lot of TV to talk about. Okay, Dan, let's get going here. Let's start with the Beastie Boys story. You reviewed that in The Hollywood Reporter. Tell us about the Beastie Boys story.
Beastie Boys story is a documentary of sorts that was going to play film festivals, and then there ceased to be film festivals anymore this spring, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And it was directed by longtime Beastie Boys cohort and friend Spike Jonze. And the gimmick is that basically the two surviving members of the group, Mike D and Ad Rock, wrote a book about the Beastie Boys a few years ago, and they were doing a fairly organized tour, and the tour was then condensed into a stage show that was eventually filmed, a stage show where basically these two guys tell the story of the Beastie Boys, and along with a healthy amount of audiovisual, of course, and so it's filmed. So I compared it to Spalding Gray, honestly, because it's a filmed duologue. It's not a monologue. And it's good, and it's satisfying, and it's full of great music, and the two guys are such good storytellers, and they play so well off of each other that you don't stop and think of how safe it is and how kind of middle of the road it is and how it feels probably too safe and middle of the road for either the Beastie Boys or for Spike Jonze, but that's what they wanted it to be, you know, that they did want this to be a middle-aged man looking back on the time when we were revolutionary young Turks kind of thing. And yeah. I think it's satisfying and sentimental in that respect, but I don't, you know, it could have been something more exciting that just wasn't what they wanted it to be. And so I shouldn't be complaining that it's not something they didn't want it to be.
Yeah. How do they handle talking about MCA?
They love him, and that's what it is. It's these are two guys talking about one of their best friends, professional collaborators, et cetera, et cetera. A man who clearly was a searching figure in a way that these two really aren't, you know, so all of his ties with, you know, Tibetan mysticism and Tibetan yeah. politics, et cetera. And so they talk about him as being this person who was an important part of the life they had and who, you know, they haven't been the Beast Boys without him. And so that's, you look at all the touring acts, the legacy touring acts that, you know, make millions and zillions and sell out arenas where you go, okay, well, that's about two thirds of the band, or that's half of the band,
right,
or
right.
how are they calling themselves? Whatever, if two of them are gone. No, the Beastie Boys haven't done that. They know who they were, and so I think they appreciate that.
Yeah, and it's on Apple TV Plus, correct?
It is on Apple TV Plus, and you know, a bunch of people on Twitter have been like, is it worth subscribing to Apple TV Plus just for this? And the amazing thing is the answer is probably yes, in the sense that it's basically it's a documentary that you could have seen in South by Southwest, and the Apple TV Plus monthly subscription fee is less than you would pay to see an on-demand movie these days, with movies popping up on demand now almost as first run.
Yeah.
So if you're paying $20 for Invisible Man or for The Hunt or whatever, you're only paying $6 for Beastie Boys Story here, and then you can watch Little America too. So
yeah, now,
I would support them.
Tom, I should preface this by saying I'm a massive Beastie Boys fan. I love them, and so I really do want to see this. So I might just opt for getting Apple TV Plus. Tom, you watched it?
Yeah, I did.
And you're
Yeah, big fan. And right after I watched it, I ran to thehollywoodreporter.com, read Dan's review, and just to compare notes.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was. I think if you're a Beastie Boys fan, you're just going to get a lot out of it because it's the guys, you know, the two remaining members, and they cover things that you might know well, you might not know super well. They're incredibly funny to watch. They're two of the best friends in the world, you know, just having a good time. Is it the most in-depth look at the Beastie Boys that's ever existed? Probably not, but it's enough for the casual fan, for the hardcore fan, to at least be satisfied and say, hey, I got to watch a cool Beastie Boys movie.
Yeah. Apple TV Plus is where you can find the Beastie Boys Story. So if you're a Beastie Boys fan, you might want to check that out. You know, is everybody's favorite? Because I'm in the minority about favorite albums. Dan, do you have a favorite?
Paul's Boutique.
Paul's Boutique. Okay. Tom,
I'm gonna go for Check Your Head.
Me too.
I'm gonna say Check Your Head.
Me too.
Although Paul's Boutique is
brilliant.
It's the best produced one out of all of them.
Brilliant record. I remember when that thing came out. It blew my mind when Paul's Boutique came out. Blew my mind. But I don't know what it is about. I'm a Check Your Head.
Check Your Head's great.
Yeah. So I don't know.
No, I think Check Your Head is sort of, it's a combination of Paul's Boutique and License to Ill, because it's got the commercial sensibility that they had in the first album, but then it's got the experimentalism of Paul's Boutique. And so if you're one of those people who is like, okay, Paul's Boutique maybe is too far out there and less in left field, it's the right combination of those two sides. So no, it's a great album.
Great album. Okay. Dan Feinberg, the Beastie Boys Story, available again on Apple TV Plus. So you might want to get a subscription if you're a fan. And since we're sticking with Apple TV Plus, tell us about Defending Jacob.
A lot of stuff on Apple TV Plus. I'm not sure that most of it has been all that remarkable, but a lot of it has been fairly star-studded, and that is where Defending Jacob fits in. Defending Jacob is a limited series. People will probably be noticing there's still a lot of limited series things coming out basically right now and into the next couple of weeks. That's if you like your storytelling in 6 to 8 hour chunks, now is the time for you. It is based on a novel by William Landy, but it's another one of those parents are concerned that their young child might or may not be a killer and have to examine their entire parenting and their upbringing and the world they live in and all of that. So Chris Evans and Michelle Dockery play parents of a teenage boy, played by Jaden Martell, who is accused of killing one of his classmates. He denies it. A court case ensues. And it's really just all about whether the parents believe their son could or could not be a killer, whether he is or is not, how you go through life when you've lived a comfortable upper middle class life and suddenly everything is torn upside down. It's got an amazing cast, and that is the reason for me to watch it. Chris Evans is very good, Michelle Dockery is very good, but the supporting cast is remarkable. You've got Terry Jones, you've got Betty Gabriel, who people will know from Get Out. She's great here. People just randomly start popping up like, oh, okay, it's J.K. Simmons for a couple episodes. Fantastic.
Wow.
And so that covers for the fact that the basic plot is an 8-hour version of basically the episode that every legal or police procedural has done like once per season for the past 20 years. The, oh no, what do we do if our 14-year-old kid might or might not be a killer? And like 98% of those episodes end with the kid looking into the camera, looking demonic. And, we know what all of the tropes are, and there's really nothing new here, but it's told with a fair amount of sincerity, and so it's watchable, and then the cast makes it more than that.
That's Defending Jacob, which is also on Apple TV Plus. Who's behind this?
Well, it's the book, as I said, and then so the writer of all of the episodes is Mark Bomback, who's done a lot of not really particularly good movies. Primarily, he was a credited writer on The Wolverine, which was a good movie, but he was also a credited writer on Live Free or Die Hard, which was a mediocre movie. So, hey, the thing about Live Free or Die Hard is it's so much better than Die Hard 5 that what are you even going to say?
Yeah.
It becomes an average movie by virtue of how horrible the fifth movie in that franchise is.
Yeah, it's true.
and it's all directed by Morten Tildum, who is he's a sort of moody prestige-y director, but I'm not sure he's a very good director. People know him from The Imitation Game and from Passengers, but at least it gives it a consistent visual look.
Okay, all right. Defending Jacob, also on Apple TV Plus. The subscription streaming services that we have you found out if they've increased since the coronavirus has got us stuck inside?
Insofar as people have given numbers, because they're all kind of bunk, there's no way of trusting them. But mostly Netflix is the one who gave their ludicrous numbers, and they gave them last week, and they talked about the big boost in subscribers, and then they tossed out a couple fairly meaningless numbers for both Tiger King and for the Spanish drama Money Heist. I think the number was like 65 million viewers watched some of Money Heist and 64 million watched some of Tiger King. But the numbers that Netflix uses, that's like 2 minutes of watching, which is completely and totally meaningless. But if you leave out the specifics and you don't care about actual numbers and you just go a lot, I think you can safely say that everyone has gotten a boost out of this because, people are looking for entertainment wherever they can find it.
That's true. Dan Feinberg is with us. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you want to talk TV. 312-981-7200. Did they send to the critics the episode of Parks and Rec?
They did. I'm trying to think if there's an embargo on it because I have watched it.
Okay.
And I think the simplest thing I can say about it is it's nice to have these people back.
Yeah.
That's what I can say with it, because there's nothing I can really spoil. It's not like it's a plot episode. It's not like it's an episode built around, answering questions or anything, because Mike Schur ended the show the way he wanted to end the show.
Yeah.
he knew the ending was coming. He built that flash forward and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
He put the characters all in the places he wanted them to be at the end. But seeing the way that the world went in the past month and a half, the writers said, let's get them back together because it's a reassuring and pleasant thing.
Yeah.
And I think people will find it to be that. It's not the funniest episode of Parks and Recreation, but you see these people and you go, oh, okay.
Yeah.
I feel content.
Yeah. The commercials for it make me happy. I can't wait to see it. I can't wait to watch it. I love Parks and Rec. I loved that show. And I love the characters. Such a great cast on that show.
And they got the people back, and they're doing it for a good cause. There are calls to action throughout for Feeding America is the primary charitable destination of choice. But
yeah.
You know, several times throughout, they say if this is not your charitable donation of choice, find someone else who's helping. There are lots of people out there helping.
Right. Okay, Dan, hang on.
Sure.
All right. Dan Feinberg, TV critic for Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N, The Fine Print. And we got more TV to talk about. If you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200 here on 720 WGN. One of my dad's favorite songs. Nick DiGilio on 720 WGN, live in the Skyline studio here till 4 o'clock. Dan Feinberg is our guest. He's a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And we got a lot of TV to talk about. Dan, welcome back.
Thank you, Nick.
Okay, we got a couple people who have called in. Here is Sean on WGN. Go ahead, Sean.
Hey, Nick. Love your show, man.
Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, my go-to shows is Forging Fire and Eating History, like your guest last night. And I'm driving my wife nuts because it might be the only one it takes like an hour to pick a show whenever, you know, you're going through Netflix and stuff. You just sit there and scroll.
No, I think that's Sean, I'm pretty sure that's a common thing. Common thing. You can kill an hour just scrolling through Netflix to pick something to watch.
I know, I miss movie stores. This would be the perfect time to have like a movie store.
Yeah, video stores, yeah.
Don't you miss them? Yeah, don't you miss them?
Yeah. So,
but I've been driving my wife nuts because I've been binge-watching The Twilight Zone. I don't know why. I love it.
Yeah. Well, you can go back to the classics. You know, when we were first into the quarantine, I busted out the Honeymooners. I got my DVD set of the Honeymooners, and I watched that.
If they hit it on Netflix, I'd be watching it too. That was a great show.
Yeah, I've got the DVD set at home, and it's just all 39 episodes, and I've seen them all probably 55,000 times a piece, and I still laugh at them. So, all right,
Sean. Same thing with the Stooges, like my collection.
Yeah. Thanks, Sean. Take care. Yeah. Dan, have you talked to people going back to the old stuff?
There's been some of that, and I think that a lot of us doing what I do have kind of had to do that. My colleague Ingu Kang and I, we did a rewatch on My So-Called Life just a week and a half ago. We basically, both of us, watched the entire run of the show. It was her first time watching. It was my first time, I think, watching. It was definitely my first time watching all the way through since 1994. I watched it when it was on, but I hadn't gone back to it.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we sort of went through it and we did the whole, does it hold up? And the answer is mostly it holds up.
It does.
Tremendously well.
I love that show. I adore that show. And I've got that. I've got the whole DVD set on that one too. And I've busted that one out a few times. That's one of my favorite shows of all time, actually.
Now, you need to be honest with me, Nick. How many times have you watched Magnolia since the quarantine began?
Oh, God. Since the quarantine?
Yeah, not in general.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, because I don't know.
A month and a half.
I think just once, actually.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I'm sure I'll watch it again. I mean, I the frequency with which I watch Magnolia is pretty big.
No, everyone's looking for both new things to watch because you've got to find distraction, and then everyone's looking back to the reassuring things, which is why everyone's getting excited about the new streaming services that are coming, because Peacock, the NBC Universal streaming service, which is coming in a couple weeks, it'll bring The Office back to people's lives, and it hasn't been available. Friends and Big Bang Theory haven't been available, so when HBO Max premieres, those shows will be available. There's a lot of comfort that people need.
Yeah, it's true. That's true. Here's Ryan on WGN. Hi, Ryan.
Oh, would that be me?
Yeah.
Oh. you know, I thought you sounded, honestly, a little bit disingenuous when you were talking about Paul's Boutique.
Oh, me?
Yeah.
Yeah, I prefer Check Your Head, and I said that. Right?
Okay.
That's all he wanted to say? Was that I was disingenuous about Paul's Boutique? that's what he wanted to say? Okay. All right.
And now you know.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Okay, Dan, the Showtime is presenting the new Penny Dreadful, City of Angels. I loved the old series. Tell me about this.
The old series, which wrapped 4 years ago, and apparently wrapped on the terms that creator John Logan wanted it to, even if its ending came as a surprise to many of us at the time. It was a very good show, particularly for Ava Green's performance, which to me is kind of an all-timer. It's an all-time great performance.
Yep.
the new series has a lot of things going for it, but it doesn't feel much like Penny Dreadful. And so you either move beyond the show that you liked 5 or 6 years ago and say, okay, I can find some use for that here. I can find some use for what's here. Or you go, okay, this isn't Penny Dreadful. I have no interest. The new season is set in 1938 in Los Angeles, and it has none of the same characters. It also, in general, has none of the same, I guess, approaches to horror or pulp fiction in any way. It deals with Mexican-American folklore, spirituality, religion a little, but doesn't seem to have that much interest in it. It's another of these alt histories, so it's, again, 1938, and Nazis are working to infiltrate Los Angeles, and that's one of the backdrops. And then another is that there's a murder investigation that brings in the first Chicano detective in LAPD history. He's played by Daniel Zavato, and he's paired with a grizzled old LAPD detective played by Nathan Lane, who's very good. And it's mostly just a hard-boiled mystery for the most part. The supernatural stuff is almost a distraction, except that you have Natalie Dormer playing 5 or 6 different parts, and sort of as a goddess of chaos, as it were. And she's great. I love Natalie Dormer. She's not given as much to do as Ava Green that was in the original. And it's the thing about it that bothers me is that in the original, if what you're doing is trying to elevate the world of Frankenstein, Dracula, Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde, et cetera, that's an interesting project.
Yeah.
But here, they're actually dealing with real religion. There are Mexican-American Santa Muerte worshippers. So kind of reducing that to hastily scratch out supernatural elements doesn't do much for me. Nathan Lane's character is Jewish. That's barely touched on. Carrie Bechet, who I love, plays a radio evangelist. And so you're dealing with sort of fundamentalist Christian religion. It's a mess, but it's a beautiful looking mess and a frequently very well acted mess. So there are reasons to watch it in that context.
Yeah, but it has absolutely nothing to do with the original.
No, Rory Kinnear is the only carryover actor from both, and he is not playing Frankenstein's monster. Right. So yeah, there are no direct connections, and I think if they hadn't put Penny Dreadful in front of it, if they just called it City of Angels and had it be a new John Logan series, almost no one would have made a comparison between the two. Everyone would have gone, his last show was Penny Dreadful. This is a new show. But instead, we're making comparisons that don't benefit anyone.
Yeah. Okay. And that's, how many episodes are there?
There are 10 episodes. I've seen six. And after six, I don't fully know what the series is. I'll probably keep going, but I'll mostly keep going because I really like Natalie Dormer. And she's a reason to watch, even if a lot of other things here aren't.
So it's on Sunday nights at 9 Central on Showtime.
Believe so, yes.
Yeah. Okay. There it is. Penny Dreadful, City of Angels, which doesn't have anything to do with the original Penny Dreadful. You know how I didn't watch Penny Dreadful until I was kind of late to the game, and it's really funny how I ended up watching it, because my ex-wife kept texting me and saying you need to watch Penny Dreadful, because she knows my affinity for the horror genre and the classic monsters and all that stuff and Ava Green, and she just kept texting me like I would text her back and say, I don't have Showtime, and she would like get it. So at her insistence, at my ex-wife's insistence, I did. I got a subscription to Showtime, and I caught up with it, and she was absolutely right. That show, I just loved that show. I loved it.
I wish this had more to do with that. I think there could have been, once they decided they were going to stick the Penny Dreadful title on it, I think they probably could have made more effort to make it actually feel more like Penny Dreadful. But, who am I to tell them what to do?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I would imagine people who are fans of Penny Dreadful turned this thing on and went, what? You know?
They've been advertising it as its own thing, and I think you would figure out fairly quickly that absolutely nobody is overlapping and that the story is a completely different story. So then you try to go, okay, well, thematically, how is it the same? Structurally, how is it the same? Tone-wise, how is it the same? And it's really not. It's not scary at all. It's barely disturbing at all. So there's none of the visceral response that had.
Yeah. Okay. All right, Dan, hang on.
Sure.
Dan Feinberg is with us, and we've got more TV to talk about, more reviews of his. And if you want to jump in with a comment or a question about television, it's 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200.
There's a port on a western bay, and it serves 100 ships a day. Lonely sailors pass the time away and talk about their home. There's a girl in this harbor town, and she works laying whiskey down. They say, brandy, fetch another round. She serves them whiskey and wine. The sailors say, brandy, you're a fine girl.
Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Skyline studio here till 4 a.m. Coming up a little bit later on, our good friend Herb Weisbaum is going to be with us. He's the consumer man, and everybody's concerned about what's going on with the economy and consumer stories during this time, and he's got a bunch of things that we're going to be talking about for his monthly visit. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We're going to talk about the beginning of the internet. We're going to talk about lucky people, the luckiest people in the world, and much more. 312-981-7200 is the number. Right now we're talking TV. Did we lose Dan? We lost Dan. We lost Dan. Also the news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. We're going to get Dan back on the line and get back to our conversation about television. And if you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200. And we always play classic comedy from the Johnny Carson show. We'll do some stand-up, we'll do some sketches, that kind of stuff. And we're going to play back some stand-up from Jerry Seinfeld when he was on the Johnny Carson show back in 1981. So we will play that back at 2:30, as we do every morning. We play some comedy at 2:30 from the great Johnny Carson show, which you can watch on Antenna TV every night. We lost you there for a second, Dan.
Oh, I'm okay, but yes, everything got choppy and scary and distant.
Hey, you mentioned, how did you feel about the finale and the season of Better Call Saul?
I thought it was a great season. I thought it was such a top-notch season. I thought probably the last The second half of the season was particularly good. There was a spectacular episode that was almost all set out in the deserts of New Mexico with mostly just Jonathan Banks and Bob Odenkirk that Vince Gilligan directed. It was a tremendous episode. And then the next episode was nearly as good. And then the finale was maybe a hair less effective than, say, the last few episodes before that. But no, it was probably the best Better Call Saul season to date. Mm-hmm. And of the great shows that have been ending in these past couple weeks, I think I'm going to miss that one even more than Better Things, but only by a little bit.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Let's see. Here's Glenn on WGN. Go ahead, Glenn.
Hey, good morning, Nick. How you doing?
All right. What's up?
Just chiming in on the Penny Dreadful. Correct. If you're expecting the old version, you're sadly mistaken. It is good. I like it. I read up on the article the producer, and this is more of a historical record of what happened in Los Angeles with the freeways, on the surface of the freeway system going through.
Yeah.
And he was taken a task by the Hispanic group to make it historically as authentic as he possibly could. I liked it. It's good. Good acting. A little bit not horror aspects in it, but more of a Mexican theology,
right,
for lack of a better word.
Right.
But it's pretty good.
Okay. All right, Glenn. Thanks.
So, hey, you're welcome. All have right. a nice evening.
So it's about the freeway system, beginning of the freeway system in L.A.?
Yeah, that's sort of the backdrop is the freeways that basically involved bulldozing entire neighborhoods that not at all coincidentally ended up being largely ethnic enclaves.
Okay.
And so yeah, and that's where it kind of gets on my nerves to another degree, because it's such a great story just on its own. It's a phenomenal story.
Yeah.
And it's a story that's been worked into countless movies and television shows, but still has never been done full justice. It's kind of something that's in the background of a half dozen James Ellroy books, for example.
Yeah.
And I would have loved for there to have been more of that without the distraction of the kind of half-baked supernatural stuff at that point. So
right.
there's definitely interesting stuff here. This is a fascinating period.
My go-to about the beginning of the freeway is Who Framed Roger Rabbit. That's
entirely fair, and it's also the period where this is set is 1 year away from Chinatown as well.
Yeah,
so it's very much the growth of LA and the moment at which people saw potential for LA to become the New York City of the West, or to become the other great American jewel of a city.
Yeah.
And, in order to make it into those things, they had to destroy the neighborhoods of the people who had gotten there first, as, happens a lot in American history. And it's a great backdrop. I just think it deserves slightly better telling.
Okay. All right. Before we get back to the phones, tell us about Hollywood.
Well, that's a big question, Nick.
Yeah. The show on Netflix is what I'm going to.
I figured you are referring to this is the first show from Ryan Murphy's lucrative Netflix production deal. His last Netflix show, The Politician, which was not particularly good, was from his old deal with 20th Century Fox. And it is another period look at Hollywood. This one is post-war Hollywood. And it's an interesting mixture of elements, because it's partially a let's look at Hollywood circa 1946, 1947, and sort of the change of the guard, but not too much of a change because there were still restrictions on everything. But then it's also an alt history, because the conceit is, what if this half Filipino director and this gay African-American screenwriter and an African-American ingenue and a bunch of people who were disinterested in the rut that Hollywood was in decided to change things spontaneously and changed everything in a way that's ahistorical and basically verging on science fiction and fantasy. there's a lot of real stuff woven throughout, a lot of Hollywood Babylon style lore of the people hiding their true natures in Hollywood. And then there's this fictional movie that's being made that it's vaguely disingenuous, to use our previous caller about last week's word.
Yeah.
Because Ryan Murphy knows how Hollywood is changed and has changed. And he is a man who, even if I maybe only like or love about half of what he's done, he has been so good for the industry in terms of inclusivity for directors, in terms of things like the cast of Pose, which is this amazing cast of trans actors who were never getting opportunities under any other circumstances. So he knows how Hollywood changes. And there are these great stories of how Hollywood really did change. And he's kind of boiled it down to, okay, but what if really all it would have taken in 1946 was for people to have said, we want to do this? And that rubs me the wrong way, because it's false inspiration so as to not tell another story of struggling with adversity. So there's a lot to love here. And so many of these shows that we're talking about this week are amazing casts.
Yeah.
And so you've got Patti LuPone. You've got Holland Taylor. You've got, who else do you have in this? You've got Joe Mantello, who's one of the best theater actors there is. You've got Dylan McDermott. You've got Jim Parsons. Tons of people popping up in small supporting roles. You've got Rob Reiner playing a retro studio head, just having a tremendous amount of fun. It all looks beautiful. It just really, it got in my craw a lot of what it was trying to say, because, you know, there are just so many great real stories, and to do a fictionalized story that's so much less interesting than the real story just doesn't work for me. Mm. And so I hope people watch this and then actually go and read and research to find out about the real stuff.
Okay. And that premieres tomorrow, Friday, May 1st, on Netflix.
Correct.
All right. Here's Rich on WGN. Go ahead, Rich.
Hey, Nick. Love the show.
Thank you.
Anyway, my questions are for Dan. Well, first of all, why did they cancel Castle? That was like a great show.
Well, part of why they canceled Castle was because the actors didn't get along particularly well, and it was just hard to go to work.
Yeah.
Oh, they didn't get along very well, huh?
No.
They didn't get along at all. Also, it was a show that had been on for 9 or 10 years by the time it was done. And when a show's been on that long, they get really expensive. And so there was just no way for them to keep the show going at the amount it cost and with the kind of discomfort that was happening.
On the set.
And what do you think of Busy Phillips' new show? Because my sister is friends with her mom.
She had a talk show, but it got canceled. It was a
canceled. Okay,
it got canceled. It was it was a show that did some really interesting things, and where she, especially by the end when it was clear that it was being canceled, she just started talking about whatever she wanted to talk about. She is so very talented, and people have not always given her exactly the right things to do to capitalize on her talent. But when she's good, she's fantastic.
Okay, Rich, thanks for the call. Here's Jeffrey on WGN. Hey, Jeffrey.
Yeah, listen, I wanted to mention two early series because people overlooked them, and they are outstanding. The first one, I mentioned before, Tales of Tomorrow. It came out between 1951 and 53, and so far I found 40 of the 85 episodes.
Okay.
But if you love The Twilight Zone, this was much better than The Twilight Zone.
Okay.
And so I recommend that to a lot of people. Now, the company that originally came out, because they came out with three volumes, was Image, Image Entertainment or something.
Okay. All right, Jeffrey, we got to hit the news. So thank you for the call. Thank you for the recommendation. Dan, hang on, okay?
Okay.
All right, Dan Feinberg is here, 312-981-7200. We got to go to the news, which is coming up next. I'm not alone. just a silly thing. All right. I'm going through. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Skyline studio on this Thursday morning. We'll hear until 4. And coming up in just a little bit, our good buddy Herb Weisbaum is going to join us. He's the consumer man. And we've got a whole bunch of consumer stories. And if you have questions or comments about consumer-related issues or scams or any of that kind of stuff, Herb's here to help. He'll be here in a little bit. We are continuing our talk with Dan Feinberg, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. Some more TV to talk about. Dan, we are back.
Excellent.
Okay. All right. Tell us about I Know This Much Is True.
I Know This Much Is True premieres on HBO on May 10th, and it's yet another of these limited series that we're talking about this week. This one is a six-hour adaptation of the rather epic Wally Lamb novel from, I guess now, 22, 23 years ago, and it is the story of identical twin brothers, in this case both played by Mark Ruffalo, one who's battling paranoid schizophrenia, and the other one who has spent his life minding his brother as his brother's keeper. And it is 6 hours of darkness and disturbing material and all manner of misery and sadness. So if that seems like the kind of thing you've been looking forward to in recent weeks, here it is for you. it's a hard watch. On the other hand, the book covers similar materials, and it was a bestseller, and people, you know, poured through it. It's like an 800 or 900 page book. So I assume people would be perfectly happy to watch the adaptation, which is from Derek Cianfrance, who did Blue Valentine, and who is an interesting choice here because he is not a director who has any problem wallowing in misery.
No.
But he also is, you know, he likes to make you feel bad. So
yep.
Mission accomplished. On the other hand, he gets fantastic performances out of his actors, and if you're gonna watch this, you're watching it to watch Mark Ruffalo in two very different performances. They delayed production several months between shooting the material of him as the brother who's in somewhat better shape, who's definitely has his own anger management issues, but it's only battling that, and the scenes where he filmed playing the schizophrenic brother, and it's fairly seamlessly integrated, and it's a great performance. He's guaranteed to be nominated for an Emmy. He probably is going to win. It's a very good performance. It's just a tough sit, and you have to be in the right mood for it. Yet another one, though, with a fantastic cast. Melissa Leo plays the twins' mother. It's actually not a very good part, honestly, and she's barely in it. I wonder if at some point more stuff with her was shot and trimmed for some reason. I don't know why. But, you know, Rosie O'Donnell, R.G. Punjabi, Imogen Poots, Julia Lewis, Catherine Hahn, you know, lots of very, very good actors. But really, if you're watching this, you're watching it for Mark Ruffalo, and he definitely delivers. On the other hand, it's in some ways similar to You Can Count on Me, which is a much better Mark Ruffalo performance, even without all the showiness. And Kenneth Lonergan is a better writer than Wally Lamb and a better American tragedy writer. And so you can watch You Can Count on Me in only 2 hours. And I might recommend that instead. But on the other hand, lots of people did love this book. It's an interesting book, and it's a very straightforward adaptation. So it premieres May 10th, and you know, you got to be in the mood for it.
I totally vividly remember the first time I saw You Can Count on Me, and I didn't know who Mark Ruffalo was at that point. And my God, he's so good in that movie.
It's a young Marlon Brando performance. It is completely one of those performances where you go, okay, that's a person doing something significant and doing something different. And, you know, it's Laura Linney at her best.
Yep.
And it's wonderfully written. It gets way deep beneath the surface. To me, that's a great piece of writing and theater and filmmaking. This is solid and decent, and it serves the basic purpose, yeah. which is, ooh, look, Mark Ruffalo playing two roles.
Yeah, and it's I'll watch him do anything. I'll watch him do anything. Did you see Dark Waters?
Still haven't. I have the DVD in a pile somewhere, yeah. and one of these days I want to.
It's a really good movie, and he is great in it. So
it's totally a movie that got lost at Oscars.
It did
last
yeah.
year, and yet I have a lot of friends and colleagues who say what you say, that it's really solid and better than its fate.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. Absolutely true. All right, let's squeeze one more phone call in here. Here is Eric on WGN. Go ahead, Eric.
Hi, Nick. Thank you.
Yeah.
My question is, I'm visually impaired, so is there a way I can make all my channels talk to what they would describe to me, you know, whatever I'm watching on TV, it'll describe, you know, the different scenes. That includes the commercials, because now if you notice some of the commercials, they just show something on the screen, and then, you know, they just play music, and they don't
yeah.
really say what they're for.
Well, Eric, I think it depends on the TV, because you know you can have descriptions, you can have visual descriptions, but it I'm pretty sure it depends on your TV. Like if you've got that service.
Oh, okay. So like I have DirecTV, so it depends on the DirecTV then.
No, I think it depends on your TV, the actual TV that you own, the physical TV.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you would have to look in to see if you have that option, you know. So.
Oh, okay.
Okay?
Thank you.
All right, Eric. Dan, really quickly, Homeland ended.
Homeland did indeed end, and only 6 or 7 years after people actually stopped talking about it. no show. Well, maybe Grey's Anatomy. I feel like Grey's Anatomy probably gets a comparable amount of that show's still on.
Yeah.
Because, you know, these are shows that people at one point definitely did watch, and so people are like, okay, I knew that show existed. But I can't believe that it kept existing.
Yeah.
So, but it had a solid ending. It was probably an ending that was correct for the series, but also one that underlined a lot of the things about the show that really have always annoyed me, which is involved the show's kind of worship of the character who Claire Danes plays, and plays wonderfully. But the show has always been much more forgiving of that character and her errors than I ever was.
Yeah.
So the finale is kind of all about that. But, you know, it did some things fairly well, and I saw a lot of people on the internet interested by it. So, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, right, Homeland's still on.
Yeah, I gave up on it a long time ago. I stopped watching Homeland a long time ago. I used to really like it, and then I just kind of got disinterested.
You know, it was a great show for a couple seasons, and the dynamic between Damian Lewis and Claire Danes was kind of the show,
yeah.
and
yeah.
then they kept going with the show for another 6 years.
Exactly. All right, Dan, thank you so much. You know, stay safe, and we will talk to you in a couple of weeks.
Always a pleasure, Nick.
Thanks, buddy. Dan Feinberg, everybody, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can read all the stuff that we were talking about, full reviews, at The Fine Print. That's how you can follow him, F-I-E-N, The Fine Print.